The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon and welcome back. Today is Thursday, 23rd day of August, 2012. The Dow's down 91, S&P down 8, comp off by 16. Bright spot in the market, gold up $35, crude about 24 cents. That's been a whirlwind day in monetary policy, and at the end of it all, nothing's really changed. Yesterday, the Fed minutes from the last meeting came out sounding more dovish than expected. Several voting Fed members appeared to have been this close to pulling the trigger on more quantitative easing. The dollar weakened, gold shot up, and stocks erased much of their losses for the day. Now, the reason why the minutes took the market by surprise was that since the last Fed meeting, the data seems to have improved, and everyone pegged the odds of more quantitative easing as being very low. But then on CNBC this morning, non-voting Fed member James Bullard said the obvious, the minutes are stale. To put that in a nutshell, things have changed since the meeting was held and the minutes were created, and now, you know, some 3 weeks later, I believe it is, things have gotten better. And the markets have obviously come to that conclusion today, because here we see, this is when the notes release. We initially had a run-up, and then we ran all the way back down in this 1 hour. We ran up, ran back down, ran up, ran back down. But then we continued to march higher overnight right into the London Open. We got up to a high of 14.18, 14.19. And then today, it's just been a steady decline. A little bit of a reprieve in this hour right here. But now, looks like we're headed back to potentially challenge the low of the day, which is at 14.01.5. And if we break through that, we've got one weekly zone left below us. We've got one trading day left. So could we see it today? We sure could. Quite frankly, I would like to see us break through it. You know, whether it's to the upside or the downside, I would like to see us just get out of this constricted range that we've been in now for far too long. Last week, we talked about we had eight back-to-back sessions that were the tightest range in 62 years. Now, as most of you know, the Bible says that Jesus rode a donkey into Jerusalem, where he was greeted by adoring crowds before beginning his passion and eventual crucifixion. Now, I'm not making this up, but what if the donkey had doubled as a Wi-Fi hotspot? A biblical park tourist attraction in Israel has fused together the ancient and online worlds by equipping its donkeys with wireless routers. Visitors to the park dress in authentic biblical robes and ride the donkeys to see and imagine what life was like centuries ago. Now, I'm not making this up. Now, thanks to the Wi-Fi enabled animals, those visitors can instantaneously share with friends what Old Testament times were like via tweet, Instagram, photo, or a Facebook wall post. And the donkeys will wear the routers around their neck. Greece, trying to figure out how to make some money. Looks like they're going to sell a few islands. We've all heard about the Greek Isles. Did you know there were 6,000 Greek islands? Now, some are just tiny outcrops of rocks, so... But of the 6,000, only 227 are inhabited. And Germany and some of the others are putting pressure on them. Now, Greece itself doesn't want to sell its islands, but Germany and the others are putting pressure on them. You know, you want to be bailed out. You need some cash. You have assets, sell them. You know? So, if you ever dreamed of owning your own Greek island, there are a few on the market already that are privately owned. You can go to privateislandsonline.com. And after forever, I don't even know how long, Microsoft today, I guess it's the first time it's happened in their history, they rolled out a new logo today. You can see it. It's kind of boxy. Goes along with their new tablet, which I believe is called... What is that thing called, Michael? Good afternoon, by the way.
Good afternoon. Surface, I think.
Surface,
it?
Yeah. So, at Microsoft.com, you can check out their new logo.
Am I right on it?
Okay, and Bert is asking me to go to a four-hour time frame and show the big fat doji at the high a few days ago. Okay, Bert, I will do that. Ooh, a lot of stuff on that chart. Let me get rid of it all.
Entertain me.
I guess you'd be talking about that one, Mr. Burt. Right there. That's a big one. Yep. It's got a low of... You know, I didn't realize this till the other day. Low of 14.16.75 and a high a 1424.75. When I hover over a candle, can you see my tooltips? Do they pop up on your screen? They don't, do they?
No.
See, I didn't realize that. I always thought they did. The other night when I was making a video and I went back and watched some of the video, I realized that I could see the tooltips, but that the tooltips did not, and I was talking as though the tooltips were showing up. And I've always talked on the radio program as if the tooltips showed up to everyone else. Because people wonder, what is it doing? Well, I'm waiting
there,
for that.
There they are.
Did it pop up?
Yeah, I think you just have to hold your cursor in place for a period.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
sometimes it shows it.
Okay. On the video, it definitely didn't show for whatever reason. So the low, 1675, and the high. Boy, you got to get that thing just right. 2475. So, yeah, that was definitely a big candle. All right, Michael, let me go ahead and just pass the charts and everything over to you and let you run through the recap.
All right.
And we're going to move through this rather quickly today.
All right. There I now have the charts. All right. There
and
we go.
We've got your charts.
You can see them, right?
Yep.
Yes. Excellent. All right. Let's, well, you know what? Because I wasn't able to be here yesterday, I didn't do a recap yesterday either, so why don't I just jump all the way back there and see if I can start with the trades I took yesterday. There they are. Okay. I'm going to do that. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is August 23rd, 2012. I didn't do a recap yesterday, so I'm going to cover yesterday as well. The results for yesterday, we had plus 12 ticks on the NQ, and we're flat everywhere else. The results for today were plus 11 ticks on the NQ and plus 8 ticks on the ES. Okay, so those are the 2 days' results. Plus 12 ticks yesterday, NQ, and today plus 11 ticks, NQ, and plus 8 ticks, ES. All right, if you've not taken a trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply, and you can take the free trial with us. With the free trial, you get 5 days in our live trading room, 2 hours per day, 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And you also get all of the indicators and data feeds and charts and everything that we use in the live trading room. You get all that stuff for 5 business days to make a decision, okay? Let's see. I just went through the results, so let me just go through the trades. I'll start with the trades from yesterday, okay? I'm going to go quickly because I am doing 2 days' worth here. So this was the NQ yesterday. Our first trade yesterday morning after the bullish cross right here, we had a pullback down to the BBC with a with a bullish divergence down here. I had said yesterday morning I was only going to take the A-grade trades when they set up, and this right here was an A-grade trade. I went long here, and I took some profit up here. Okay, the next one was over here. We had a bearish cross, test of the BBC, down close with bearish divergence. Everything was red. It was an A-grade trade. I took the short, and I took a break even over there. I had taken another trade over here. I was waiting for something to happen yesterday. I don't remember what it was when I was just looking for the A-grade trades. I think we needed to get above or below some zone on another market. But over here we had a bullish cross, a test of the BBC with an up close. I went long there. I ended up taking a break even again. And we had a bearish cross with a test of the BBC and a down close over here. This, again, was an A-grade trade. I shorted there, and I took some profit on that one. Excuse me. Those were the trades that I took yesterday on the NQ. All right, I did not take any other trades. I'm just scrolling through here to see if any other ones set up during the day. We're now into the afternoon session, and though there was one right here, it wasn't the best trade because the cycle's in the middle. Another one in here is still not the best because the cycle was headed down. This right over here was an A-grade trade, this short right here. All right, what we had was a bearish cross, pull away from the BBC, pull back to the BBC with a down close, and everything was headed down right there. Okay. There was another one right over here. This was not a grade, but it was still a trade that could have been taken. And in the afternoon, you can see right in here, there were a couple of opportunities. Here and here. All right, now I'm going to jump to today. All right. Let's see if we jump over here. After the open this morning, we had a bullish cross test of the BBC with an up close right here. It had bullish divergence down here. Price came down, tested the BBC, and gave an up close. I didn't take that trade. I had missed it. That was an A-grade trade. You see how everything stayed blue on the up close. But I missed that trade. I did take... I highlighted a momentum trade that was there this morning, which is right in here. Partners know what I mean when I talk about those. I did take this short trade over here after the bearish cross to test of the BBC. There was another one right in here that had bearish divergence. Tested the BBC with a down close. But I took this one over here after you tested the BBC with a down close with the bearish divergence. I took some profit on that, not too much, just a couple of ticks, I think. We had the bullish cross test of the BBC with an up close over here. You see the bullish divergence, up close. All that was good. Bearish cross, same thing over here. I took some profit on that. I took some more profit on this one. Tested the BBC with a down close. I missed this trade over here. And I don't think I took any more trades on the NQ. I missed a couple of them. This one right here. This one right here. I was more interested in this one, but I missed it. And when I say I missed it, I mean I put an order on, but it just didn't fill me. Okay. Yeah, Bert. Fortunately. And that was it. There was another opportunity right here, as Dwayne was speaking, on the short side. Okay. That was the NQ this morning. The ES this morning, the ES was, well, it had, let's start here where it opened up. It opened up right inside the weekly trading zone, so we weren't going to short right here. All right, we wanted to see some movement beyond the zone, and we wanted to see the BBC get down below the zone. So it did finally do that over here. We had a short order on right here. We were trying to get short over here, but it came within a tick of filling us, and so we didn't get filled on that move down. Price came up right here. We had a bullish cross pull back down test of the BBC with an up close. Though we got long on this over here. We were long on this at 1404 and a half. You can see we took 2 points profit on that, and then it got pretty choppy in here. It got a little bit tricky, is what it did. You know, the trend lines that I had drawn on there. Once we broke up above this one, I said that should open it up to higher prices. It did make higher prices almost up to the zone, and then it came back down and honored this trend line that I had drawn way back here. All right, it dropped through that back to this trend line, and it stayed in between them for a little while, and now it's right back in between them. I had explained to the folks in the live trading room this morning what to look for from this. We need to get up above this trend line or below this trend line for it to really break out one way or the other. Right now, I don't know, right now it just doesn't look like it's got a whole lot of momentum in any direction. Let's see, over here on the NQ, we already did that. On the YM, I'll show you a couple of trades that happened this morning, that triggered this morning in the live trading room. I didn't take either one of them, but I know we have at least one partner who did. Right here, we had a lower low in place, and it pulled back up and tested the BBC and then moved all the way down to the zone. All right, shorting the BBC right there is what that one partner did. And he took some profit on it. I don't know how much profit he took, but that is what he had done. Once we got the bullish cross, it pulled back down, tested the BBC again right here for a move up. That was a 20-point move up and at least a 20-point move down. Right in here is when the ES started to get really tricky. When I say tricky, I mean it was just, I don't know. It wasn't giving us anything that was really tradable. Okay. I couldn't trade this because the weekly trading zone was too close. Had I traded it, it went right up to the zone, which would have been okay. But my target was one tick beyond that, which wouldn't have been okay. I would have gotten stopped out of break even on it. I would have moved my stop up to break even after I had 1 point profit in the trade. Right now, what it's doing is it's giving a shorting opportunity here at 1403 half. If you were looking to short the trade, 1403 half is what you would be looking at there. I didn't trade any crude this morning, so I don't really want to go over the crude right now. I can show you the Russell really quick. I didn't trade the Russell either, but just using the same exact stuff on the Russell. Let's scroll back here to the open. There were a couple of momentum trades right in here on the Russell right after the open. A long opportunity here with the bullish divergence on the slingshot. Okay. A short opportunity here with the bearish divergence on the slingshot. A long opportunity in here. After the bullish cross, a test of the BBC with the up close with the bullish divergence. It's the same exact stuff over and over and over again. Okay. Test of the BBC with the up close. Test of the BBC with the up close. All right, and that was the NQ. Right now it's testing the BBC with the down close. So it's suggesting a little bit of downward movement here right now on the Russell. Okay. That, my friends, was it on the morning session. If anybody has any questions about any of this stuff, you can type them in right here or email us at support@cfrn.net. All right, reminder for everyone who is a partner, there's a partners meeting tonight, Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. For everyone who's not a partner, if you're taking the free trial and you've been on the free trial for a while, you want to become a partner, you should have an email about it already. Okay, there should be something in your inbox right now with the information required to become a partner. You need to be a partner to be in the live trading room. I mean, not in the live trading room, but in the partners meeting. Okay, if you have any questions about it, give me a call. My phone number's in that email. One last thing before I hand the mic back to Dwayne. We had a cross into a red envelope, a pierce of the red envelope from the bottom right here, suggesting a 5 to 6 point move down from 1403 half. That would put us right down at the weekly trading zone, the next one down at 1398. Okay, so that would be perfect. All right. I don't see any questions popping in here, so I am just going to wrap up the recording here. Again, www.cfrn.net/apply to take the free trial. All right. Here we go. Recording is off.
Very good. Okay. Just double check, but I don't think Robin's going to be with us today. And I don't think Mike Reed's going to be with us today. And so, without any further ado, we're just going to go straight to Las Vegas, Nevada, and talk to Mr. David Williams at PageTrader.com. Reminder, partner meeting tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you are on a free trial or you've been on a free trial and you're ready to become a partner, you have to get the paperwork taken care of today before the partner's meeting. You should have been emailed that information. If you need it, you don't have it, send an email to support@cfrn.net. support@cfrn.net. If you need to speak to Michael or myself, 415-857-5654. If you have a question for Bert, toll free, 866-928-3310. All of that contact information is right on the homepage of the website, cfrn.net. If by chance you're hearing the sound of our voice and wondering what charts we're talking about and such, well, you're only getting half of the experience. We have both audio and video. If you want to participate in the video from the homepage or any page on the right-hand side, below the radio tower is a red, white, and blue button. You click that, takes you to a page that allows you to get into the chart room. Now, it takes about a 30-second registration process. Good news, you only have to do that once a week. I always suggest do it on a Sunday night or a Monday morning, and then you're good to go for the entire week. You don't even have to think about it again. In fact, you'll get an email every day that says, hey, reminder, the radio show starts at 12 noon Eastern. Here's your link, and all you do is just click, and you're in. So, if you want to just listen to the audio stream because your screens are already filled up with your own charts, that's fine. But I know that some of you do want to see our charts. You want to be able to participate in the discussion. You want to be able to type questions into the chat box. And we invite you to do that, okay? With that, stand by for a quick station identification. And as I said, we'll go to David Williams at PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310. And we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, David. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
And I don't know if Robin Dane is with us, the trading coach, or not.
Nope. She had some flooding at her home yesterday, and then last night she went out on a search and rescue, and she's still out on that right now, as far as I know.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, she's a busy girl.
She certainly is. Yes, some young girl went out into the desert last night and did not return. So she's out there with her crew looking for her. And so hopefully they will find her.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's some very anxious people waiting to find that out. It's great that they have a crew that's just waiting to do that kind of work.
Yep.
You know, later when GPS becomes even more usable, you know, on the person type of GPS, people could... you know, take their forays into the desert, into mountains and things like that. GPS doesn't always work, but for the most part, it would be a wonderful thing to be able to track those people instantly and be able to know where they are. I don't know why people do that out here. It's funny because the desert out here appears to be relatively benign. You know, it doesn't look like it's a big deal to wander out into the desert. Your place, you live in an area that's very similar, but the truth of the matter is that people often get very disoriented once they're away from ordinary cues for where they are, like roads and things like that. Once you get into the desert and everything starts looking the same, and before you know it, you're lost. That's why it's a really good idea to either have GPS on you or to go with somebody, tell somebody that you're going, whatever it is, because this has been going on for, you know, forever out here. People don't recognize how easy it is to get lost once you don't have your normal visual cues around you. You might be able to say, well, there's a mountain that I know that I'm looking for, but the funny thing is it's very easy to get lost. Just no matter what you think you have, it's easy to get lost out in the desert. And then you add to that any kind of heat or any kind of flood thing that makes you walk a different way, and before you know it, or ride your bike a different way or your car, and, you know, you've got some problems. So we'll find out. I hope they find her, and I hope everything's okay.
All right. Other than that, I don't know of any big news today other than what I had mentioned earlier. The Fed minutes yesterday were very dovish, and it kind of made it sound as if the Fed was ready to roll out QE3.
Mm-hmm.
But as one of the non-voting members stated today, because those notes are a little stale and some things have changed since then, the chances of that are greatly diminished. So the market had a little run up yesterday, and now we're running back down today. In fact, on a daily chart, which I have up, if we close down in this territory here, anywhere from where we are right now to lower, that's definitely a bearish setup there. And Mike Reed had sent me a note. He could not be with us today, but he's pretty convinced. He emailed me yesterday that he was pretty sure, let's see, today's Thursday, Wednesday, that Tuesday we had put the top in, and so far it looks as though he is correct.
Uh-huh.
So as long as we stayed under 1420 yesterday, and today that he would maintain that stance. And so far, that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. Too bad we couldn't have him on today. I guess I'll just have to fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. That should be easy.
What do you got?
Shall I begin? well, we can start with the S&P.
Okay.
And we'll move our way across. There's a few markets, a few things of interest. The S&P is of interest because in our work, our particular way of looking at it, we mentioned this yesterday, of course, but just to repeat it, we were looking for the week of August 13th to test 1421 level. This was a forecast that we had made on the program, and they did test it 1 week late, which was this week. And if they failed at the 1421 level, then that would send prices down first to 1404, then 01. Both of those levels have been tested. However, like we mentioned yesterday, an additional move down of approximately down to, you know, roughly speaking, the 13 to 85, 86 level is possible if they continue to break and hold below some of these critical levels that we're talking about, one of which would be 1404. So we'll see how that plays out, and 1401. That whole range, like I mentioned yesterday, really from 1404 down to 1399, there's a lot of stuff in there for us, like we mentioned yesterday. And so although today's panel shows it broken down a little differently, it shows it 1404, then 1401, then 1399, it all kind of fits into that 1404 to 1399 level. So they break those levels, closing below them, and that leaves the door open for an additional move. All of this down to the 1385, et cetera. And if I was trading that, by the way, I would do this in, you know, I would take things off in 10-point increments. Like if I were to trade short based on this indication, we talked yesterday that we liked the idea that if the market bounced off of 1404, that would make for an easier short sale because we believe 1404 is important if and when they would bounce and then come back down and take it out. And that's what they've done today. They did bounce, and now they've come back down and taken it out. So that type of setup is cleaner. It makes it easier for us to you know, have the confidence to go short or to take the position. And if we did, we would want to take something off at or near the 96, 97 level just to be sure. I know that's not that far away, but just to book something and then hold the remainder for the possibility of, you know, lower prices still. As it sits right now, you know, we have a very quiet market. We do have a very strong indication that we're going to close below 1421. So, therefore, a pretty good size reversal would be indicated here, and this is the start of it. So, often that first target, the first place they're going to run to, they get to very quickly. Not in every case, but in a lot of cases, like what they did with 04, that first number, they just rush right down to it. And it makes it difficult unless you're in, and we know some people that were short from way up high that were in for the move down to 04, and good for them for doing that. The market makes it difficult, and then at that point, with that much movement having been done, a lot of traders are more hesitant to want to go short further because of, you know, maybe certain indicators are oversold and, you know, and so on. So we like the idea of potential for further decline being real here, and we'll talk about that. We'll continue to talk about that. In spite of that, we still like the idea of it's a much bigger picture, but that the market would be moving higher and that we would be later testing 1475 and higher. That's obviously not today, but meaning in the broader, bigger picture that higher prices are going to be coming. And really, this now that this has happened, the run up to the 1421 level on the week of August 13th, or, you know, that's the week it was due, with that having happened, to our viewpoint now, how we handle this decline, how the market treats this decline will be very it'll be indicative of if we're still going to be correct about much higher prices coming later.
This is one of the reasons why we have continued to use options, you know, selling puts in individual stocks against the larger idea that the market is going to continue higher. We missed some of this run up recently here in the last several weeks. I mean, we're still in, but not in anywhere near what we normally trade because we just didn't get as clear an indication. And so you just let that trade go and you wait for the next one to set up. Today, we do have a reflected wave webinar, which is at 1:30 Pacific time, 3:30 Chicago time, 4:30 Eastern time. And we're going to show our most recent statement, which is just from a couple of days ago, starting back from the fourth month of 2011 till just a few days ago, purely options trading, just trading the individual stocks and putting options on them. And we're going to continue to show that throughout the years because this is a particular account that we do utilize reflected wave in the most, meaning we're really simply just trading the turns. Longer-term turns, these are not day trades, although some of them are small enough to be considered that. There's quite a few profit, you know, when you're looking at the profit column, you'll see that, you know, there's many trades where we just take them off with $200 or $300 gains, and then there's many larger ones, but they're really not intended to be day trades. They're really more or less longer-term positions. Like, as an example, a weekly top like this might ordinarily trigger sales of calls, which is an option for a multi-week decline. But because right now we have the outlook that the upside is really the bigger picture, we're less likely, although I did make the argument that we could do some with this move, but be that as it may, we haven't done anything with it. Our strategy is more or less to wait for more important pullbacks and continue to sell puts until we get further confirmation that that isn't the right thing to do. And at some point, that may happen. You know, you can't be right about everything. But, you know, looking for the high probability stuff and then carefully trading it does work out over time. Like I said yesterday, making right decisions works out in your favor over time. It doesn't work out in your favor every time. Sometimes the right decision is to take a loss. And that does work out over time because you're not going to be subject to a larger loss. But in general, we're just trying to find out what the right thing to do under a given set of conditions is and then try to do those things as often as we can when we get involved with trades. We don't want to get involved with trades that we don't have the courage of our convictions. In other words, maybe we don't feel fully strong about it. The move may still happen. And we might sit around, and say, oh, man, look how much money we would have made. We really don't do that. That's old. But what we do is when we do have the courage of our convictions, we do trade those moves. We will take on some size in those moves with options and try to maximize those. And then we're peeling options off as the market moves. That's why we see a lot of these smaller profits, because as soon as the thing goes in our favor, we'll book a few. You know, if we have 50 or so, whatever the number is on options, we'll take some off and then we'll take some more off. And then finally, you know, we'll be completely out of a position. We like to scale out of positions. And in doing so, that means that you don't get all of the move. If you're correct and the move really runs, you don't get all the profit on the number of contracts that you had on. But you never get the worst results either. You don't get the absolute best that's possible, but you don't get the worst either. And that kind of works out over time in your favor when you're not trying. Because if you try to get the very best and hold on with all your contracts, there's going to be plenty of times where you know, it doesn't work in your favor as well to do that. So, you know, it's a give and take thing. And the market seems, in general, the market's very fair. It's not a bad, it's a very fair employer. I mean, there's nothing wrong with thinking of it in terms of as an employer. It tends to pay you when you do the right thing according to your understanding. Now your understanding may be all wrong, and that doesn't, you know, you could do what you call the right thing, of course, and you could lose. But I mean, in general, making right decisions where probabilities are in your favor. So the question is can you detect when probabilities are in your favor? And that's what we're all working on. That's what everybody's practicing, is detecting when the probabilities are in your favor. And then that in, tied together with doing the right thing each time, which includes managing the position, managing the stop, honoring the stop. If you're stopped out, et cetera, you know, we live with it. You know, there isn't a government program yet for day traders. There won't ever be. There's not a government program yet for day traders so that if they lose, that there's some kind of a check they'll get in the mail from the government. So we have to do the right thing so that we can consistently make money without having to rely on, you know, a government program of some kind. I know that sounds silly, but I'm just sort of poking fun at the government. There's plenty of government programs that coddle people. There's plenty of government programs out there that, you know, turn people into, you know, I'm sorry, but just wimps that just don't want to go out and have to face a hard day's work or have to go through something. You know, a lot of growth in people happens through rough times. If you read the stories of people who have done incredible things in their lives, they almost always include hard periods that they had to work through, things that, you know, and, you know, having a government there for certain types of things, certain types of safety nets is absolutely a great idea. But like any idea, it can be taken way too far. And at this point in America, we have not only the largest number of people on food stamps right now that we've ever had, which is inching in on 50 million people, but we also have another 50 million people on various other entitlement programs where they're getting checks and whatnot, not including Medicare and that sort of thing, but other types of entitlement programs. There's only about 312 million people in the United States. That's about 100 million people getting various checks and things. And you know, some of these people absolutely need them. I think the ordinary person is compassionate towards other people who are in dire straits or need something, whether it's mothers, you know, in a bad position because their husband took them and did something bad, or, you know, any number of things. Those programs are needed and necessary, but, you know, we don't want a nation of people that are on, you know, a baby bottle, you know, and those, that type of government, it really is a form of government control. The people who say very often, well, I don't want the government controlling me and doing this and doing that. But when the government sends you a check and you start becoming dependent on that check, believe it or not, that is a form of control over you. Because now you're going to do just about anything that government asks you to do to keep that check coming. So how are you doing when you say, you know, oh, I don't want, you know, I'm a person who doesn't want people to control me. Well, government starts sending you a check, they've got that control over you. And people don't do well under those conditions. People do well when they are given a challenge and they rise to the challenge, not when they're dumbed down and given checks for meaningless reasons just so they can live off other people. That's not the way it's supposed to be. I don't go around asking you to pay my tax bill or my power bill. Please don't go around asking me to pay yours. And that's what this government is leaning towards more and more, that the producers, the people who do produce, and the ever-shrinking, I might say, number of producers are going to have to pay an ever-increasing amount of money to take care of the ever-increasing number of people who are on the government dole. And, of course, the people who get those checks are going to vote into office the people who say they'll keep writing those checks. And before you know it, America gets dumbed down and we're not the great producing nation that we used to be. I think Barack Obama is a deeply conflicted man who is very charismatic but has very tormented visions of what America's supposed to be, according to not only his father, who he wrote a whole book about, his father's dreams. You know, George Bush, many people say he went into Iraq to fight his father's war, and this is a very powerful influence on people, people's fathers. Barack Obama's father felt that America needed to be punished and shrunk down because of previous activity, and he's now president, and, you know, America has shrunk. We've clearly, this wasn't his doing when he came into office, but you know, the kind of debt that we've added is the kind of thing that could really damage long-term our ability to get out of this hole. And like anybody, like we've talked about before, the longer and deeper this goes without getting fixed, the harder it is going to be to get out, and the more people are going to have to scream when their entitlements are withheld. And what happens with these entitlements is that once they start them, they never, ever, ever go away. So you have to be very careful with any new program that the government wants to start. I mean, we have to stop starting new entitlement programs for people because they never go away. It's just another thing that we all have to pay for. And, you know, right now, if you go back over the history of presidents, average debt that's added under a president has been like $1.5 trillion. You know, George Bush, George Bush Sr., $1.5 trillion, Clinton, $1.6 trillion, Reagan, whatever the numbers were. Well, under this administration, we're inching in on having added $5 trillion to the debt, you know, three times what we've already done. At that rate, it's unsustainable, and there's going to be a big crash. And, you know, does not anybody in Washington care about the debt? Does not anybody on the left care about the debt? I don't know why they don't, because that's how nations crumble, is through that sort of thing. I mean, aside from a Sodom and Gomorrah outcome, where we're just struck down by an angry God, we'll do it to ourselves. There's no need for outside intervention. We'll just spend ourselves into oblivion, and then everyone will be pointing their fingers in blame and all that stuff, and we're back to soup lines. So, you know, I just want to say this, and we'll get onto the markets. I know you want to help people, the people on the left. You want to, you know, get people together and help them, and in many ways that's a very nice thing to do. But it also has an enormous amount of ignorance involved in it in many cases, because in order for you to enact what you call help for other people, which in some cases is hurting people, you could take the entire system down, and then look who you've hurt, everybody, in your zeal to help this group or start another program, or, you know, finally the straw breaks the camel's back and the whole system collapses. There's only so much money to take from the people. You know, if you go look at Europe or France, the president there now is asking for 75% from rich people. So if a person makes, you know, $1.3 million, he's going to owe the government $975,000 of that. Those people aren't going to stay around. They're going to move and take their productivity elsewhere. Things don't look good for France with the producers being taxed at 75%. That's where we're headed. So, and you know, the middle class is shrinking. You know, I just saw something on news today. The middle class is shrinking in size. Everything's going, every measurable number you can take is going in the wrong direction under this administration. Every single one. And that's one of the reasons this is the most hotly debated and also one of the most angriest and dirty, dirt-filled, slime-filled campaigns we've seen, where the president acts like he's not in control of these things, but, you know, the super PACs are, they're being paid by him, but they're coming out with the really nasty things, you know, calling Mitt Romney a felon and calling him a, you know, a person that caused a woman's death by cancer, and just completely out of the, you know, it just goes to show they have a sense of entitlement that is frightening. But I won't go into all that right now, because I already have in previous programs. So, anyway, here's the thing. Whatever you think is good for the country, the last 4 years has been bad. And the guy had his shot. He never takes any blame for anything that goes wrong. It's always somebody else's fault. If you're comfortable having a guy run the United States of America that has not once been able to stand up and say that anything that's ever gone wrong under his 4 years is a direct result of his actions, then you have something loony going on in your head. America requires leadership, and we do not have it under this administration. We have a bunch of finger-pointing junior high school kids who want to come out looking clean even after everything they touch turns to garbage. And that's what's happened here. And that's one of the reasons why when somebody like a Mitt Romney comes along, somebody who has the very experience that this country could use right now, they have to throw so much slime at him. I don't know who Mitt Romney really is. I don't know how good he is, but he isn't going to be doing what Barack's doing. He's not going to be putting us into endless years of, you know, slavery to debt. Debt and slavery should be under the same category under the dictionary. because the more we owe, the more we're a slave to that. So keep all of that in mind when you vote. In fact, don't keep that in mind. Just vote for Mitt Romney. That would be a good thing to do. Just get somebody else in the office. The guy had his chance. All right. So we're near the lows right now. I don't have much else to add to that other than, you know, substantially lower prices like the numbers we talked about are likely here into next week. Let me take a look if there's anything else I want to add to this on the shorter term. No, nothing yet. So, Dwayne, unless you have something you want to add to the S&P or anything else that we've said.
No, we're just waiting for it to get down here to 97.98 and gone.
Well, we'll be seeing that at some point here.
That's our lowest level for this week. We'll have something lower for next week, but for this week, that's... And I would just... It wouldn't bother me at all to see it just crash through there because mm-hmm. we really need to open these ranges up because this is still... I mean, this is going to a daily chart here now. Let's see. We had a low here of 1387, and the high up here was 1424. So, and that's over a period of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 trading sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean... We had the equivalent. Okay. There's one day. This 13-day period, range-wise, was equivalent to this one day right here.
Mm-hmm.
Or this one.
Yeah, it was a very strange period in there. Each and every day was very, very quiet, very small range. These markets as big as life. All these different kinds of things happens. It expresses itself in any number of ways. So here we are. We're breaking. We're about to break to new lows here. They're attempting the new lows on the session right now.
And on this daily chart, some may be seeing that as a shoulder, and that as a head. At which point we could go sideways a little bit, get some shoulder action over there. So, yeah, I think lower prices are definitely in order.
Oh, of course, yeah, no doubt.
We're done with
okay,
the
so let's,
upside
oh, go
for
ahead,
a while.
Man.
I'm just saying I think we're done with the upside for a while.
Yeah, we are. There should be a multi-week deal off of this, no doubt, with the prices we talked about and lower. Okay, so let's move over to the gold market. Take
yeah,
a look at gold.
Very nicely today.
Yeah, they continue to work very nicely. We have a number of people who that we know of that had followed the forecast for the advance off of the recent 1586 bottom that we were looking for an advance from 1586, which was on August 2nd, up to 1647, which has been completed, and the market has continued higher. And we said yesterday that we thought that higher prices were coming as well. So this is very good, and this ties in very nicely with the market having spent quite a bit of time. This is gold, December gold, having spent quite a bit of time retesting the original reflected wave bottom of December of last year, December of 2011. The monthly chart put in a reflected wave bottom. They retested that bottom about 5 months later in May of this year, and then the market just now is starting to really show its hand on the upside. And I think higher prices, I mean, we're going to go up to 1698 ultimately. Even with the usual pullbacks, we're going to see 1698 and 1700, if not higher. So this is good news for the gold. I have to say, to be honest with you, you know, this has been a difficult period for us because we've been in gold for many, for 2.5 years. And... in this pullback has been a combination of, at certain points, scary, and at other points, just worrying because of the amount of time they spent down here. So this is a great relief, finally, to us because this stuff wears on you after a while. You know, when you're in a position for a long time, long is a relative term, isn't it? Because long could be an hour for some people. But when you're in a position like this for this long, it's tiring. It does wear you out. You're tired of thinking about it and worrying about it, and you just want to, you know, book whatever you have and that sort of thing. We're trying to trade it like a trend following methodology here, because there are so many people that won't hold a position, or so many types of trades where it's not necessary to be in this long. And gold has the possibility. We don't have a forecast for it, but it has the possibility of substantially higher prices still. I'm not sure right now, and I'd like to do some work on the gold over the weekend to see if there's any kind of roadmap on a much longer term basis that would have us moving to something that would forecast, you know, something substantially higher, rather than just trading up to some reasonable levels like 1700 and that sort of thing. We're trading at 1670 right now. So anyway, so that's gold. This has been a beautiful example of a very nice setup in a combination of roadmap and reflected wave, and the market has advanced very powerfully here. So if there's no questions or anything about gold, or any comments you want to make about gold, I know, Duane, you're longer-term bullish.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Jim, I want to address Jim's question. Jim, you had asked about that little head and shoulders thing that I drew on the S&P chart, if that was bearish. Yeah, if you go and look at any type of technical analysis book, the head and shoulders pattern is usually showing you some kind of a top in the market, and when you get a break of the neckline, that signifies the entry. And then the distance from the neck to the top of the head is how far you anticipate it to move. And then you have what's called a reverse head and shoulders, which is just an upside down of what I drew. And then that, when that neckline is broken, that's considered to be bullish. But if you Google that, Jim, you'll find some charts and stuff that explain it pretty well. Mm-hmm. Other than that, there's a question on Tesla, but I'll just wait till we get around there, and then you can.
Okay. You know what? If you want, I'll jump right over to that right now just to answer it, because
Ed has a question. He goes, do you guys believe chart patterns still work? That's a big question, but do head and shoulders patterns sometimes pan out? Yeah. Are there times that they don't? Yeah. I mean, there are a number of patterns that are just kind of ingrained in traders' minds, and some of them may have reached a point where they actually become self-fulfilling prophecies. In other words, so many people are convinced that this thing is going to happen because this particular pattern has appeared, that is it now the pattern unfolding, or is it the mass psychology of all the people observing the pattern driving it? So I still look at patterns, and am I still keenly interested in particular, I'm far more interested in things like candlestick patterns than I am the traditional head and shoulders kind of pattern. But I'll let you answer that question as well, David.
Oh, with regard to patterns, it's a very subjective thing on a certain level. It's very subjective, because I've seen over the many years that, you know, one person who will say this is a head and shoulders, another person will call it something else, but it still is a pattern to them and it means something. But with that regard, one of them might be complete and ready for a move and the other one is not complete yet. So there is a great deal of subjectivity in pattern recognition. So it is a loaded question, because do you believe that patterns work? In my work, we don't actually use, per se, patterns. There's nothing wrong with them. We just don't lean on patterns for that. But I will tell you that I think it's true. I think your question is maybe even deeper than that. It's, you know, do things work? Does anything work, you know, in the market? That might be the deeper question. It's patterns. Do they still work? What's that, Duane?
That anyone who's a CFRN partner and has spent any time in the partners' meetings or watching the videos, they know that I, although it's a commonly used phrase, it's something that I really kind of take issue with, and it's kind of just a weird thing, but when people go, hey, I found this thing that I think works, or somebody will say, hey, does that thing you had still work, or I don't like the way that, because the markets are what work. I mean, everything works some of the time. Nothing works all of the time. And so, for some reason, it rubs me. I'm not rubbed wrong at the moment, so please don't think that, whoever was brought up this topic about it working. I think that people fall into traps when, because it sets them out on this search for this thing that works, and they can hang, you know, their career on this thing that works. Really, if you'll put that aside and know that any number of things work off and on, but that the market always works, if you'll approach it from that direction, I think it'll end better for you. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Dave?
I kind of know what you're talking about with when people say, does that still work, et cetera. I think what I was saying is that one of the deeper versions of that question, because sometimes when people ask a question, you can think to yourself, well, what is there a real deeper question in that? And maybe the deeper question is does anything work in the market? And whether it's a pattern or anything else. And I'm here to tell you that things do work in the market. Absolutely. There are many things that do work in the market, but they don't work all the time. And part of our work as traders is to determine which tool we're going to use in the market under these conditions, because the conditions change.
Right.
So the toolkit, you know, if you have more than one set of tools, you can get pretty skilled at determining which is the right tool for the market, and even that doesn't work all the time.
Well, you brought up yesterday the MACD. In a trending market, that MACD, you make a lot of bread with that thing.
Yeah,
but you
exactly.
try it, but you whip that thing out in a range-bound market, and you'll go home with some bangs and some bruises and some bumps on your head.
Mm-hmm. So the right tool for the right condition, market condition, would be one way to answer the question that, you know, does this still work? Here's the answer. Yes, under the right conditions. And you can start learning more. Like, as an example, what could we call conditions? Conditions could be trending, like Dwayne just said. Or it could also be a trading range. That's a condition. High volatility is a condition. Low volatility is a condition. And there's many different conditions. And you learn over time which tool works best in a given set of conditions, or which set of tools works best. So things do work in the market. So I want to give you a very positive answer to that. The market is not random. It has a nature. Everything has a nature. A snowflake has a nature. A dog has a nature. Dirt has a nature. The sky has a nature. Planets have a nature. I can go on and on and on. Dust has a nature. Atoms have a nature. Everything has a nature. The market has a nature. And you can go back and see for yourself, and it's very interesting to do so, to go look back a long time back, go get some old books and take a look at something like the cotton market, and then compare that to the S&P market. You'll see that they don't trade, they don't look alike at all if you look closely. And then you go bring up to date and now go look at the cotton market. And for pretty much all intents and purposes, it's trading the same way that it did, with the same kinds of its own peculiarities as it did 50 years ago. All the traders that were trading 50 years ago are gone, and yet that nature continues in the market. It's very interesting to see that. So the market does have a nature, and because it does, yes, things do work. Under certain conditions, that same thing might not work for a while. You know, we used to give out a whole lot more roadmaps on the market. And then the market changed, and it now, the roadmaps work, but it now requires more time and more watching to wait for the conditions to arrive. They used to arrive a lot more often. And then there's some conditions where roadmaps just are not going to be applicable, and that we're going to use a different tool. But under the right set of conditions, boy, you can do a lot with markets. So I wouldn't worry. Now coming back to the original level of your question, just referring to patterns, I wouldn't worry too much about pattern recognition. Find something that works for you, and under certain conditions, it's going to be very good. And try to detect what the conditions are that the thing works in. Instead of simply looking and saying, I hope this thing just does this one thing all the time, wait for it to do its thing and then study the conditions which surround it while it's doing that. And that will help you later to determine the conditions to use that idea. And then go to other things and look at them. I mentioned yesterday, and I think there's a lot of good in what we talked about, that there are certain indicators that are much better in trading ranges and certain indicators that are much better in trending markets. That's an example of conditionality again. So, and look at your own life and look how different you are in different conditions. You're at a party and talking to somebody, you are acting differently under different conditions than you would if you were in school talking to somebody. You know, so it's true about everything. The market is as big as life, and yet, very much like life, it does have patterns to it. It does have hidden intentions that can be expressed in, under certain conditions, and on and on and on. If the market really was not tradable, if it wasn't possible to do anything with it, everybody would have figured that out, and nobody would be trading it. The fact is that it is workable in many different ways, but it takes a lot of practice. In most cases, people don't just wake up and trade well in the market. And like Burton McHale, who wrote the Random Walk Down Wall Street, suggested, and I think I'm in complete agreement, the average investor, which is the majority of the people, will do better by simply buying an index fund with some of their money, you know, a constant, you know, year-by-year buying of that, than they will trying to pick stocks, even though it's fun to pick stocks. So, it, you know, stuff works. There's plenty of things that do work in the market. And, you know, you hear people talk about, oh, the VIX doesn't work anymore, you know, or something like that. The VIX, I've heard that several times in the last 20 years. The VIX is the volatility indicator. Right. I've heard that over the years several times. The VIX isn't going to work all the time for all conditions, all times and places. And yet it's a very wide, it has a lot of breadth to it. It covers a lot of what the market's about. And it still doesn't work all the time. So it's not, let's find something that works all the time. It would be nice, but let's find a bunch of things that work under certain conditions, and let's find those conditions, and let's apply those tools.
Which leads me back to my statement, is the one thing that does work all the time is the market.
Yeah.
Market shows up for work every day. Even if you don't feel up to it, or you have to call in sick, or you need to go on vacation, or you have a meeting, man, that market, it works every day. And so if you can address the market by going, okay, Mr. Market, who works every day, how are you working today? And then you can come at it from that angle, because however it is you're working today, however it is that you're unfolding today, that's, I want to be in step with you, not fighting against you. And back to the pattern thing, you know, like a head and shoulders pattern, typically those – the larger the time frame, the more important the pattern might be. But on, let's say, an S&P 500 daily chart, you might get a couple, three head and shoulders patterns a year on a daily chart. Or maybe you get 5 or 10, or however many it is you get. You know what I'm saying? If you decide that you want to specialize in, like, three patterns, you might not get those patterns today. And I suppose that's okay if that's the way you roll. If that's, you know, if you're okay with that.
How do you roll, Dwayne?
Well, there's somebody that wants to know how you roll. He says, here's what he said. Let me scroll back up. He said, yesterday, David predicted...
That's me.
That would be you. Predicted that Tesla would be up today. It was up first thing this morning, but quickly dropped. Is this behavior consistent with his prediction, i.e., is that how he rolls? I threw that part in. Okay.
That's good. Okay. Our prediction for Tesla originally, let's just go back a couple days, and let me get it up here. The prediction for Tesla was that we had a very important, relatively important roadmap that was coming up. And that meant the forecast was that the market would continue. This was back on, I think, August 17th or August 20th, that the market would want to go down to $29.03, and it would want to touch that price on August 22nd, plus or minus a day, because all our stuff is plus or minus a day. August 22nd, it did go down. It did touch 29.01, which completes the 03, and we forecast that after having done that, it would rally. It would have a multi-day advance off that level. So yesterday, they did advance off of that level, and they closed up at 29.95. Today, did move higher initially up to $30.35, and now they're pulling back. When we forecast these things, we talk about a multi-day advance. It just means the market's going to be above. It simply means we're looking for higher prices. Yes, we are. But it can play out any number of ways, but the market in general is going to be trending higher. That's what we mean by that. So we're not forecasting specifically that there will be three straight up bars, as an example, after a bottom, but that the market will tend to go higher and continue up. And I do expect higher prices from where we are even now. Now, there is always the possibility of the inversion, which I'm not expecting. An inversion can occur inside the window of plus or minus one day. And that would mean that the inversion could make today, August 23rd, a top for a much more important, decline. Okay? Now, I'm not expecting that, or to be honest with you, I'm usually not expecting inversions, and sometimes I do get bit by them. But this laid out very nicely. So far, everything is normal. Another way of asking your question is, if you happen to be in this, hey, it's pulling back a little bit, is everything okay? And the answer is yes, right now everything is okay. We would, like we do with all of our positions, I don't know where a person might have gotten long, but our suggestion our suggestion for a stop would be, at this point, there should be no daily closes below 29.01, nor should there really be any hourly closes below that level either. But if everything goes as normal, and most of the time it does, but if everything goes as normal, then you would see a multi-day advance off of this. But it doesn't necessarily mean that each succeeding day is just going to be higher and higher and higher. There are volatility cycles that occur, which we've demonstrated on the program, where you can, in fact, forecast a multi-day straight-line explosive move. And we've done that on the program a number of times. This is not really that. This is just a good roadmap setup for a multi-day advance. So I hope that's helpful to you. This one, you know, this is near perfection. Market's going to bottom on August 23rd. It's going to touch 29.03. It's going to reverse off that, and it's going to move higher for a multi-day advance. You know, that's about where we are in the thing. About all those things have happened, and the market is doing just fine right now. The fact that they made a new high today and have sold off a little bit, that's just normal market behavior. And it is, of course, anybody who's long would worry about that. And if that's what your question really means, I wouldn't worry too much yet. And I wouldn't worry in the bigger picture anyway. If this does turn out to be an inversion, then fair enough. We don't want to be long, and we want to be stopped out at some point. You don't have to use our stop. You could use a higher stop and protect yourself prior to them getting down there. But for me, what I found with roadmaps is that it's better to be willing to take a slightly or even somewhat larger loss, because the roadmaps do tend to run in the direction, and you don't want to be stopped out unless you have to be. You want to be in the position. You may have to sit through a little bit, but the main theme is August 22nd bottom, multi-days movement up away from that bottom at 29.03, and continue holding, and then we'll talk more about it. The way that an inversion would look, of course, is that tomorrow the market would continue down lower, as an example, and then they would break the low, and then maybe we'd be down at 27.90 or something. We'd be, you know, the heck down there. That's the way an inversion would look. There have been, I just want to say about inversions, because it took me a long time to really understand what on earth was happening, you know, when an inversion would occur. And I've seen and studied them, And I, you know, from time to time, I can actually trade the inversion. The inversions tend to be much better trades because they're a surprise to everybody. There's not a bunch of people sitting in a room smoking a cigar knowing, you know, that I know of that are going, oh yeah, it's going to look like this and then it's going to go like that. It surprises a lot of people, and typically surprise is, if you can trade surprise, if you can be in surprise, be on the right side of surprise, you're in a very, very good position that often, in most cases, runs much further than anyone would expect. So if this did invert, that would highly, that would be a very tradable move on the downside, most likely. Again, I don't expect that. Everything so far has been normal, so I hope that helps the person who is asking the question. So, and we'll update this every day, you know, as we continue tomorrow and Monday, et cetera.
Richard,
we'll track this.
Richard had a question, Dave. If Tesla was to test its weekly reflected wave bottom at 2552, would that not tie in with a monthly bottom at that same price level, which would then be a very powerful buying area?
That almost sounded like poetry. It was so well said.
That's Richard.
I'd like you to read that again. That was beautiful. Yes, that would. I mean, if I got what he said correctly, yes, that is correct. One of the things that we do, and I'm only going to mention this now. I don't like to go into too much on the program, but reflected wave utilizes multi. You can utilize multi time frames, and it can make the original principle much more advantageous. And so what he just asked was a question about, you know, utilizing it from a multi time frame standpoint, and that allows you to, you know, nest these things together and really get a very strong kind of a grip on where the market is and what it's doing. And so yeah, I would have to answer yes to that. Now remember, this stock has only been performing or out since June of 2010. This is Tesla Motors that we're talking about. And the only reason I'm bringing that up is because it's young in its life and it has all kinds of possibilities. It's not constrained right now by previous market movement. There's only 2.5 years, very much like how Facebook just opened up, you know,
right,
a couple months back and doesn't have a lot of previous price movement and a lot of interest in those prices yet to play the market around. So, you know, it's an interesting proposition that this stock has a lot of tradable setups in it. So yeah, Richard, I would agree with you on that. So, okay, so let's do this. Let's switch back over. I hope that answers the questions about Tesla, and we'll move on here. We went through gold, so gold's moving higher. The Facebook, to use your terminology, Dwayne, real quiet, very much inside the continued downtrend. I don't have anything to say about it at this point, except that it's, you know, it's ugly. I guess that's about the only thing.
And
that's not technical work. That's just...
The original website was thefacebook.com.
Okay.
You did not know that.
No, I did not know that. Johnny Carson, 1979.
Yeah, originally it was called The Facebook. And that was the actual website address. In fact, I don't know today if you type that in, I don't know if it still resolves over to that address or
not. Probably does. It probably does. They own all of that stuff.
Facebook.com. Yep. It still takes you right there.
Okay, so we'll move on
today,
from there.
Here is where we are on the chart. $19.48. So, mm-hmm. Little bounce off the lows. We got down into the 18s there for a little bit. But so, we're off the lows, but there's more. Let's see. Go see what those numbers are. Is Facebook still a gamble? Okay. A New York judge yesterday ruled, or a couple days ago, ruled that poker, by his interpretation, is not gambling. It's a game of skill. And that could heavily impact, that could set some precedents for how the whole gambling issue with Facebook starts to resolve itself. They're doing it in the UK now. Okay, so August 15th has come and gone. 268 million shares hit the market, or are in the process of still hitting the market. October 14th will be the next big day. 249 million shares. And November the 13th, now there's a big day. 1.3 billion shares. 49% of all the outstanding shares will become free trading on November 13th. And then on December 13th, another 124 million. And then next May, another 47 million. But that's, I mean, 268 didn't knock it down that far. The 249, we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But boy, when 1.3 billion frees up, wait and see. We'll wait and see.
All right, so let's move ahead of here. If you're ready, Duane, we'll move on to the Treasury bond market. For those of you with Reflected Wave, you knew what we talked about on the radio a couple weeks back, which is that the week of August 20th, this week, would mark a bottom in the United States Treasury bond market. This is the 30-year weekly bond market. And they've had a very powerful advance. We talked about it several times on the program in the last week or so, and they're continuing to rally. This is very important, aside from the technical work, this is very important because the government has suggested that they're going to keep interest rates low with some form of magic, and they're going to do that over into 2014. And low is a relative term. They've been extremely low. They could, you know, even move up quite a bit and still be considered low. So I don't know exactly how far they mean they're going to keep them low. But interestingly, because the bond market is reacting very well off this bottom, this again will keep interest rates fairly extreme on the low side for a little while. Because this bottom, similarly to the one on the daily chart that we talked about with the Tesla stock, this would normally produce a multi-week advance on the upside, where the other stock, Tesla, was a multi-day, but same principle. So we're getting the results that we thought would occur in this market. The market is confirming very nicely. And as I mentioned the other day, the next top for this would be today, although I normally would expect the market to try to reach the 148.26 level. Today's high has been 148.18. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit higher prices into tomorrow if they can't reach that level today. But because I am looking for a multi-week advance, this is one of the things that we do. Now, we're not trading the T-bond market, but if we were, we would wait for the pullback off of the reflected wave top and then find a place to buy the market for a further advance into the multi-week advance that is expected. So that's one of the ways that you would use this information, you know, in trading a particular market using multiple time frames. Okay, let's move on to the euro contract, which we had more questions about this earlier, you know, meaning a month or so back when the market was in a much more dire position. But Reflected Wave had called for a bottom in the euro right around the time that it was really looking ugly, which was the month of June. And the bottom actually came 1 month late in July, although July did close above the low of June, which was further confirmation and why we've constantly said the bottom is in likely in the euro. They continue to move higher here. Somebody had asked this question. Somebody was in the euro. I doubt they're still in it this long. But the market continues to advance nicely here. This is just another example of a longer-term time frame where it takes some time, but the market does make bigger moves. And that's why sometimes we like to trade these longer-term moves as well. As well as day trading, we like to trade the longer-term moves as well. As we're talking, the S&P is breaking to new lows here, so I wouldn't be surprised to see the 97, 96, or whatever numbers you were talking about, Duane.
Yeah, we just hit 98.
Okay.
97, 98. There's a question from, let's see, Ed, about soybeans. ZSX. He wants to know, please review David's call for an hourly bottom in beans yesterday and if the targets were hit.
Okay. First of all, although this wasn't a forecast, we're talking now about the November soybean contract. Both Bert and I agreed, we were talking about this, and although we didn't have an outright forecast, and I did mention this on the program, that it was likely that a top was due right around August 22nd or 23rd in the bean market, primarily based upon the August 22nd and August 23rd dates in several other markets. And we talked about how many times have we talked about it, that when we see other dates in other markets for a reflected wave or whatnot, it tends to be a good indication for the market that we might not have such a clear indication on, as an example, soybeans. So it turns out that was correct. The market did top and then did have a nice, you know, we're beginning a multi-day reaction on the downside here. So that's number one, the daily top. Now, the hourly bottom that we would be calling for would be against a daily top. So let me go bring up, give me a minute here, and let's bring up the what we talked about yesterday. So in other words, we're dealing with forces, and the hourly bottom that we talked about yesterday was due, I believe, at, this is Chicago time, around the 12:30. That was either the one unit early or it was, I can't remember, it was one unit early or on time. But they did bounce nicely off of that. They made a low at 17.15. You know, soybeans making a low at that price sounds ridiculous because that's a very, very high price. But they made a low at 17.15, and then they rallied practically back up to the top, the high that they made, the recent all-time high of $17.34. They rallied back up to 17.33. They just came within 1 cent of that high. So that's a reflected wave bounce. However, all of that is contained inside of the bigger picture, which it's likely, remember, this wasn't an outright forecast for this decline. This was just, we think it's likely that they're going to have a decline, primarily because many other markets have this same date, and that would lead us to believe. Bert had his work, I had mine, and we both felt that it would be, speaking of the bottom there, that was about a 40% rally off of that bottom from what Bert had messaged me. But either way, so we had the 60-minute bottom. They did advance. They tested the high, and then now we've come back down, and we're now exerting and showing the daily turn. So that's about my only – that's the whole shooting match right there. Had we had an actual reflected wave top, I would have been more aggressive in putting out something to do with this other than simply, you know, buying a bounce – you know, off of a 60-minute low and that sort of thing. But it's nice to see that it's coming down. And this just further confirms the general idea that when many markets have the same turning point date, it tends to allow you to have more confidence in a particular market that you're trading in. So I hope that's helpful.
Okay.
Is that good enough, Dwayne? Or?
Mm-hmm. I think so. Any other questions on that, Ed? All right.
We have a couple other little things I want to mention here. We were on the euro before we got out of.
There's a question from someone else. What is the common turning point date David is referring to?
I don't know about the term common, but common meaning that if we detect by looking at multiple markets that, say, the S&P has a turn on this date, bonds has a turn on this date, the euro has a turn on this date, let's just say, then we're going to take that information and say, well, we have three very important markets that are all have a future date on August 22nd, 23rd. Just picking those markets. I don't know that they do.
Gotcha.
But whatever, yeah. And then we're going to take that information and say, well, this market over here, which also has an indication for a turn, will likely turn as well. That's all. We're just saying the whole gang's doing it, so it's likely this guy's going to go along with it. That helps me if I'm trading this guy.
Mm-hmm.
That helps me know that I have the force of the majority rules, and they're on the side of the turn. Does it work every single time? No. but it works a whole bunch of the time. And what it really does for you is it helps you in the world of confidence, in the way of you know, knowing that you have something that you can rely on, and confidence plays a big part in your ability to you know, follow through on the plan, so to speak. So, okay. If there's no other questions about soybeans, I'm not trying to avoid soybeans. I just wanted to get over to the euro. I wanted one other thing I wanted to say, which was important, I think, about the euro. We have the monthly bottom in the euro. The next top would be due next week, week of August 27th. Okay. Now, with that in mind, as long as the euro, for this particular setup, as long as the euro remains below some certain levels, we have quite a bit of ways to go up, then that's going to be a very important top for shorting activity. Now, I have to say this because I get this a lot. I did not just say to go short the euro. I said next week, when the market continues higher, that is the week that we're going to be looking at the idea of then going short, not now. Because it's very easy for people to hear me say euro and short, and then they say, well, I shorted the market, and then it went higher. The higher is expected. We're looking for higher prices into next week. That's the on-time week for a top in this market. So we would normally expect, it's 1 week early now, could happen that way, but if we get the higher prices, which is the normal behavior, then we would want to potentially short that. So keep that in mind. That's the week of August 27th. That's next week. Okay, let's see. You know, we talked about a friend of mine, somebody that we work with as a trade, has traded the silver market and did very well with this move up. I have to say that we had not been watching it, and I don't know that I would have had a signal to have the kind of confidence that he had in getting in this. We did have the signal in gold, which was a very clean and beautiful signal. It was like a Mona Lisa type of, you know, I mean, it was very pretty. It was a very good signal, where silver didn't give the same quite signal. But he took this position and is out of it now. But this market really exploded well on the upside. So it's nice to see that.
Yeah, he had 30 bucks on today.
Oh, I know. It's just an amazing, amazing move. Okay, and then we can switch over to crude. You know, crude continues to advance, and I don't have a lot to add to crude right now, except that the month of August that we talked about would normally mark a high. We've mentioned this. It's sort of a general signal that we'd be looking for a high in the month of August to be put in here. So we'll have something to do with that a little bit later, but they're starting to turn now, and we may have, as an example, you know, the crude oil market has turned. We might do something with this early next week on the long side once they give us a signal to do so. But I'm saying the first decline won't be the main thrust of it, most likely. It'll take more movement, and so there'll be some buys and sells in there before we get done with it. And then let's see if there's anything else here. Let me just see. Any other markets that we haven't? We have a few other markets we can talk about. We've covered all the different basic ones, the bonds and the this, that. But let's take a look at some of the less traded markets, see if there's anything in these markets. I've been watching, just for me, I just have been watching cocoa just to see how cocoa trades. And I do want to say that this is not a probably most of the people don't trade this market. But what I am watching for, if people want to watch along, this is not a forecast because I'm new to this market, and every market has a certain kind of a thing that you have to discover about it, I believe, in order to trade it correctly. And in this particular case, I believe this is not related to reflected wave, but I believe that if cocoa were to continue to decline, this happens to be December cocoa, not a forecast, but if they did decline to the $2.35 or $23.56, I'm not sure which way you name it, into Friday or Monday, that would be an early sign that we have something to do with this market on the long side. So I'm just watching that. I don't want anybody to take anything from that. I normally wouldn't even say that because people will go, oh, you know, David said to buy cocoa. No, don't do anything with cocoa. Let's just watch it because it's not a market that we're familiar with. And I'm trying to be honest with you, I'm trying to figure out its base number, the number that it works off of. And I don't know that I have that correct. So I'm just watching it, and I'm letting you know one of the indications that I would have it correct would be into Friday or Monday at that 235 or 23 price. I'm not sure I don't even know how to price it correctly, what to say what it is. Let's see a few others. One moment for a few other markets. Let's see, copper, we're not doing anything with that right now. See, these are the markets that we don't do a lot with. Natural gas, don't have anything immediate on that. I will say this about natural gas. And again, this is something that let's just watch this for now. But I believe that the week of August 27th also would be an important potential weekly bottom in this market. So I do want to see how the market trades here, but we're following that. And you might want to keep in mind, there's two markets already that have a week of August 27th for a potential. Let's see here. I think that might be it for today, Dwayne, because a lot of this is still pretty slow. Okay. The S&P – oh, go ahead.
No, I said okay.
Okay. The S&P continues down. We did make a low of 98 here, so they're testing those levels. For today, if they made a new low, if we did test 98 to 97 into the next hour, like right now, or technically, if you look at your hours, you'll see that right now we're in the fifth hour of the day. This is not including Globex. So the sixth hour, which is the next hour, which starts in about 48 minutes or so, that hour, if they went down and tested, here's the thing. They normally would be testing 97, 98 in that hour anyway. That's a natural place for the market. If they do that and they contain that price, even if they break below it but they close above it, that would give a late session long entry signal for a bounce. So that would be something to consider. It's not a real super great setup. All these, you know, different setups have different qualities to them, etc. But if you do this a long time, you can judge the qualities just like a person walks into somebody's store and you can kind of pretty much size up a customer, you know, like a shopkeeper can and that sort of thing. You kind of do that with the markets. This is okay though. They've done it 2 hours early, but if they come down and do it in the sixth hour, or I would even say if they were to do it in the fifth hour, the one we're in right now, if we go back down and test, you know, 98 to 97, I know we've already hit 98.50, but if we go down just a little bit lower in the fifth hour or the sixth hour, I would watch that area for a decent close and then a subsequent rally off of those levels. So that would be something to consider as we would want to watch it real time to actually trade it, of course. So that's about everything that we have for today. I was kind of moved a little bit by the question, you know, like Dwayne was as well, but about, you know, does this work or does that work? And I don't mean in a negative way, just that there really is a wonderful thing about markets. They really do have the possibility of having a really strong edge that you can work over a period of time and be able to, along with taking controlled losses, you can actually get way ahead if you practice with the market. It is doable. You don't have to be born that way. You can be like any number of people who had to go through all the steps to learn and sort of, you know, for lack of maybe even a better word, sort of just mature into their own comfort level of understanding the market and trading effectively that which they understand. If you trade entirely off of somebody else's indications, there's a qualitative difference between that and really understanding something for yourself. It is different. You can still be successful trading off of somebody else's stuff, but there is a qualitative difference as the operator of that program that when you understand something from yourself and you're comfortable with your understanding, that's a different feeling and a different kind of a motivational force than merely taking somebody else's signals. And that's why it's good to listen to the program, to practice the trades, to practice if you're utilizing Duane and Michael's or using our stuff, whatever you're using, you're practicing and you're putting together better trades. You're waiting for the stuff that you understand, the part of the river that you understand. And when you do understand something, you really have a lot more confidence. You know, if you walk into a, you know, it's like when a man walks into a car dealership or a, you know, service department, if he works on his car, he's very confident. He can talk with these people because he knows what he knows, and he's confident in that, and he can deal with situations. If you walk in not knowing, it's a little different. It feels different. It's kind of like that with the markets. So practice makes, it doesn't make perfect. It makes gracious imperfectness. Practice in the markets. Practice makes gracious imperfectness, and you can do a lot while still being imperfect in the market. You don't have to be perfect, but you have to do the right thing all the time, if most of the time. I'll even say that. You have to do the right thing most of the time in order for it to work out over time. And it is tempting to do the wrong thing. It's just like every other area of life. What always tempts you? The wrong stuff. You know, it's always there tempting you to do the wrong thing. Well, the markets are the same way. They tempt you, and, you know, how much of that gets to you will determine to some extent how successful you are in this. Because even the big boys, even the guys that trade really good for periods of time or have really big returns, they get caught up in that too, because there is kind of a drug high from doing really well. When people, I'm actually afraid of a fund that does really well 1 year because they might be high on that endorphin thing, and, you know, they're not going to make the same kinds of decisions that actually produce that performance because they're high. You know, it's almost like they're smoking something.
Well, so, I mean, just look at the top 10 funds for last year, and then, or look at the top 10 for 2010, and then look at the top 10 for 2011 and see how many names show up on both lists.
Right, that's good. Yeah, and it may also just be, including, and that's a great point, that it may also just be that it's very difficult to maintain that level of performance year in and year out. But over a number of years, you know, you can do really well. I mean, I know a trader right now that is up, I know this sounds ridiculous, but he's up 300% on the year with a decent-sized account. He's, you know, it's not that difficult to take $2,000 and turn it into $6,000. But it gets more difficult to turn 200,000 into 600,000.
Right.
That's a different whole game. And you'd say, you know, in theory, it's like, well, it's just a number of contracts, just put them on. But it is different. It is different because there's, you know, there's valuation involved. There's the feel of how much money you're winning or losing. And all the bits and pieces work that much harder for you or against you. So, you know,
quick final two questions here.
Sure.
Richard wants to know, would finding a base number have to do with price and time for that particular stock or commodity such as cocoa? And would the base number be the same for both price and time?
You know, the question isn't quite right because of the nature of the base number, but the base number for us is a number, and I can't go into too much detail, but I will give you as much as I can, and I want to say it in a way that you can actually get something from it. Okay, each market has a way of expressing how much of each component of the three dimensions it utilizes. And that fact determines its base number. Now, it's true that every single move utilizes those three components differently, and yet the base number is still discoverable because of certain factors. So your question is about, you know, is it price and time? It actually has to do with all three. And the purpose of the base number is to allow you to then know that the later forecasts that you're going to make, like as an example, take Tesla. 2903 for that individual stock was due on August 22nd. But August 22nd is not necessarily going to be a date for the next stock, nor is the price 2903. It's those things are there, and they're there because of the base number, which again is a measurement, it's a final number that references the way the three dimensions express themselves. So that's about all I can really say about it right now. I mean, we don't teach that right now. We don't teach the roadmap principle, which, you know, spatial relationship forecasting right now. We may at some point in the future, but we don't do it right now. But this is one of the reasons why, you know, reflected wave and spatial relationships are the two of the main reasons why I'm so absolutely confident that the markets are not random. Because in order to make, as an example, a turning point call with reflected wave, you know, you're forecasting a date that the market's going to turn, and that's a pretty good thing to have. In roadmaps, you're forecasting, in many cases, three things that are going to happen. The market first is going to decline into a specific date, one. Two, it's going to touch a specific price. It's going to go down to a specific price. And three, it's going to reverse off that level some amount, you know, whatever that, even that's a forecast. That's a lot of forecasting. If the market works out, it's, what are the odds that, it's, that you could do that randomly? And the odds are not good. That's what the odds are. So I hope that helps, Richard, a little bit, but that's about all I can go do with the details right now. All I know is that I know people, I just want to say this, I know people who trade with very simple methodologies and can be very successful. I've always had a bent, me, for, you know, the forecasting side of markets. That's just how I came into it. I didn't even know that I was going to be that way. It wasn't part of my own knowledge that I would be that way. It's just the way I was. So from day one, I've always been looking at the markets from that perspective. But other people have other perspectives and very simple techniques. Even simple techniques utilizing very simple types of indicators can be very powerful in the right hands. So it's not that you have to have every single technique out there to do successfully, or if somebody has something that you don't have, that, you know, you're not going to be able to be successful. You really can be successful with very simple techniques, including pattern recognition. There are some people that are really good at pattern recognition. God love them. You know, they go out there and they can see it and they know how to trade it. There's an author, what was his name? Gosh, I cannot think of his name, but his whole thing is pattern recognition. I can't think of his name.
I don't know.
Van
Thorpe?
Yeah.
No?
What's that?
Was it Van Thorpe?
No.
Bukowski?
No. What, hold, give me a minute here. I just can't think of it. But he has a whole book on pattern recognition, and his whole style and his whole family, from what he says, traded, and they did all their trading off of this one, not one pattern, but these many, many different patterns that they look for, and the way that they manage their risk and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. There's kind of a beauty to it. It's very simple and straightforward, and I have often thought to myself, you know, I have to give that a shot.
Right.
I have to take a try, because I'm working real hard to try to find out the deep and the this and the that. You know, sometimes just the basic simple stuff is very, very good. And so don't worry yourself too much about that. Now, for those of you who are interested, I'll say one more time, we do have a webinar today on reflected wave. We'll also show our most recent, meaning as of 2 days ago, options statement. I'm not saying if we had more money or less money. Well, thankfully, it is a little bit more, but I'll show it to you than last time. And we'll also go over reflected wave. And that, to get to that today, you can come to pagetrader.com, and you can click on our traders blog on the right-hand side, and that'll take you to the link, and you can just sign up for it and come listen. You can also ask questions, and even though those questions are answered by our moderators here at the end of the thing, I'll answer them as well, so you can get the answer from two different perspectives. And we'll go over some other stuff and some of the recent stuff that's happening in the markets right now, including, like, as an example, the T-bond and the few of these other markets that have had beautiful turns that are very good. Now, one other thing, you know, I've had discussions with people, and then I'll get out of your hair here.
Yeah, the link's in the chat box for the webinar, guys.
Oh, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Some people want something that's kind of like saying, if I learn your system, I don't want to have to do any work after that. It's almost like saying, well, yeah, you taught me how to ride a bike, and that's really neat. I could never ride a bike before, and I can really do things now I couldn't do before, but you didn't tell me that I might run into a wall, or I have to sometimes turn, or there might be a tree that I have to avoid. And because of that, it's just of no value to me because I actually have to do something. Well, you know, that's true of any methodology. You're going to have to do something with it, and you have to learn how to work that methodology. If you're not, then I wouldn't suggest going for any particular methodology other than one that you are using now or whatever. But on all these methodologies, mine and Dwayne's and anybody else's, you have to learn it and you have to put it into your world. It has to become a part of your expression in the market, what you're able to do. You have to be able to work with it, very, very nicely. And there are situations that come up that you will have to deal with under certain conditions. But having said that, and I've said this so many times in our webinars, if anybody has a better turning point methodology than Reflected Wave, that can do what Reflected Wave does, I'll buy it from you at your price. I'll write a check. And I don't mean that as a marketing tool, even though it is a good one, but the fact is I will. And I've said it many times on the radio, and I've said it on other ones. If you can show me something that can do better than Reflected Wave, that doesn't utilize the Reflected Wave principle, your own thing, that beats out what Reflected Wave can do, I will buy it. I want it. I can use it. Right now, as far as I'm concerned, Reflected Wave can't be beat by anything. And it's not in a competition with anything. But I would like to know even better. I'm always looking and thinking and trying to figure out a way to make it even better. But as it stands right now, it's the best turning point method that I know of. That's why I can confidently teach it to other people, because it does what it says it's supposed to do. And so if you want to learn more about that, please come today. I'll be the one that's talking about it. You can ask questions. We'd love to have you there. And the seminar itself is on October 6th and 7th at the Mirage Hotel here in beautiful Las Vegas. By the time October rolls around, it's going to be just perfect weather. You might even have to have a sweater, but maybe not. And we'll have a really nice time. And you'll leave with something, with a brand new set of tools that you can apply to the market that will allow you to do many of the things that you see us do right on the program here. So there you
all
are.
All right, David. And have a great webinar. Great
Thank you very much. And thank you for the questions, everyone. I appreciate the questions very much, and I look forward to being back here tomorrow, Friday, and we'll go from there. And, Dwayne, I'm not sure if I'm going to California or not, but even if I do, I'll be on the radio with you tomorrow.
Okay.
So, all right,
good.
You guys.
I look forward to it.
Thanks again. Me
all
too.
Right.
See you soon.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was.
Okay, that's going to do it for us, guys. Remember, partners meeting tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you're a partner, I'll see you there. If you're not a partner and you want to be a partner, you've been through the free trial and you're ready to move on to the next step of the journey, then send an email. Either fill out the paperwork you've already been sent, or if you need the paperwork, send an email to support@cfrn.net and say, I'm ready to be a partner. And we can still get you signed up and get you in there if you act soon. No, sometime this afternoon. We can still get you into the meeting tonight. So if you have questions, call us 415-857-5654. If you got a question for Bert, call him toll-free, 866-928-3310. This 97.98 that you see on the screen here, that is the lowest weekly trading zone that we have for the week. So when the week began and we sent out the email to the partners before the market opened on Monday, that's, we kind of go on record as saying, this is the lowest we think the market will go, and this is the highest we think the market will go for the week. So we've come down to that area. The ranges were very narrow this week. I mean, because the market has been trading in a very narrow range. I would actually like to see this fail. And just, it's rare that the market will close outside of the weekly trading zones for the week. this is a week when I would, you know, kind of just like to see it do it, because it might mean we're going to get some more volatility in the coming days and coming weeks, which would make things easier on everyone, I believe. So, but it's going to do whatever it's going to do. For now, it has come down and it has tested the zone to the tick, and it's trying to put in a little bounce. We've still got 2 hours left in today's trading, and then we have an entire session tomorrow. And then we'll have a fresh set of zones that will come out Monday morning before the market opens. Those will be emailed to the partners. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1 week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.